Chapter 30. Sunday, 2:47 p.m. Her special agent in charge, John Grayley, was waiting for Lucy when she limped into her office, now feeling every stitch and bruised muscle in technicolor waves of pain. Grayley smiled, a lopsided grimace that crinkled his eyes. Not because he was happy she was injured, but because they both knew how easily things could have turned out differently. If Fletcher had wanted, Grayley could right this minute be making death notifications to 3 families, including hers. She met his gaze with a small nod, assuring him she was all right. He left his seat and pulled a chair out from the conference table for her. Even though she usually preferred to stand, she sank down into it, leaning to one side to shield her back. It had been a hard day already, and wasn't over, not by a long shot. Grayley perched on the edge of the table, motioning for Burroughs to wait outside. Lucy was glad her back was to the bullpen. It gave her the opportunity to close her eyes for a moment. "Better or worse than Baltimore?" he asked. She and Grayley had worked together on a RICO operation that had gone smoothly, except for a 5-car pile-up in rush-hour traffic on the Beltway. No fault of hers or Grayley's, merely the wrong place at the wrong time. She'd wrenched her neck and back, been stiff for a week, unable to turn her head. "Better," she lied.
"Humph, you don't look it."
"Just tired. This thing with Megan." "Yeah, I can only imagine. How is she?"
"Fine, playing video games. But the waiting for answers."
"It will drive you nuts. I'll bet Nick is glad to have you out of there. You were probably driving him crazy as well."
"Not so sure about that. We need to talk about the thing with the Canadians this morning."
"Ah, hell." She sat up straight, jerking the stitches in her back.
"Are we going to lose them 'cause of Fletcher? The guy had a gun to my face."
He held up a hand, shutting her down.
"I talked with the assistant U.S. attorney. She thinks we're okay, especially as Ivan's partners are already rolling on him."
She slumped back, suddenly aware that the gnawing in her stomach was hunger, not nausea.
"Think you could use some of that SAC clout of yours to get my team some food?"
"Now I know you're going to be all right. Back to the little Mother Teresa we all know and love."
"Hey, stop that."
She looked around, made sure the door was closed.
"Don't start calling me that around here.
Besides, any good leader knows an army works better if you feed it to the enemy." She frowned, knowing she messed up the metaphor but not having enough energy to care.
Or something like that.
Grayley was already using the phone at her desk, arranging for a delivery from the Cheesecake Factory down on Carson Street. Lucy brightened. But then Grayley squirmed, pulled a large rubber snake out from the seat of the chair, and dangled it over the desk. Worse, he only almost smiled. That's when she knew she might be in real trouble. A knock came on the door, and Walden poked his head in.
"ICE just sent Fletcher's jacket. Taylor called. He's being released and insists on coming back. I sent Burroughs after him. I've updated Lowry and Dunmar. They know it's now our jurisdiction. They'll call if anything breaks on their end."
"Thanks," Lucy said. Walden was proving himself a definite asset. "Let's try hard to keep them in the loop. I don't want any exclusive interviews proclaiming a federal cover-up when word gets out that Fletcher is one of ours."
Grayley nodded his agreement.
Lucy stood. She couldn't think straight sitting still. "Once everyone's here, we'll start cracking this nutcase." Grayley hung up the phone and stared long and hard at Walden. Lucy appreciated the fact that Walden didn't budge, instead crossing his arms over his chest. Nice to know where he stood after her recent fuck-ups. Maybe Nick was right? No. The misjudgment with the snake handlers had come before Megan got sick. No excuses. She couldn't let Walden take the fall for her mistakes. "Why don't you start breaking down Fletcher's file?" He met her gaze, gave her a nod, and left. Grayley kept his seat, her seat, really, behind her desk. At least she hoped it was still her desk.
"Want to give me some ideas about how to explain the last few days to HQ?" he asked. "Distraction over a sick child is nothing to be ashamed about."
Lucy stood up straight, refusing to let him see the effort it cost her.
Would you ask any of the guys that? Would you allow anyone to ask you that if the positions were reversed?
So it's stress? Is the job too much for you?
My team has only been on the job for 3 months, and we've built 200 cases, she protested. I'd like to think I had some part of that.
He nodded, slowly.
Yeah, that's what your team says.
You've been talking to my team about my performance? Christ, they'd never trust her again if they thought she had a screw loose.
Routine 90-day review, or so they think.
He paused, placing his palms flat on the desktop.
Highest marks I've ever seen. From your team.
And from administration?
About the worst I've seen. Your paperwork is routinely late.
But never shoddy. I bring home the bacon, John. No AUSA has ever complained about any of my cases.
No, but this is a huge organization. We can't function without someone staying on top of the administrative details, which is your job. Supervisory special agent. You're no longer a field agent.
I can do both.
Without jeopardizing your team? Or putting innocent civilians in the crossfire?
She had no answer to that.
I need you on Fletcher. No one else could have gotten as far as fast as you have. But that's it. After we wrap it, you're confined to this office. Even if I have to chain you to this desk.
He twinkled a smile. The old Greeley, the partner who had her back, had returned.
Although, you might just enjoy that.
She had no choice but to play along.
Hey,
at least there aren't any snakes.
He scrutinized her, knowing her too well to accept her concession so easily, but said nothing. One of the few perks of being the boss was that Lucy's office had its own storage closet, a space she had transformed into a private changing room, or boudoir, as Taylor and a few of the guys put it. Usually she used it to change into casual wear for Megan's soccer games, or from regular work clothes to a suit for court or meetings with brass. Today, while Walden and John Greeley were finishing lunch and filling the whiteboard with everything they did and didn't know about James Fletcher, she used it to ditch the hospital scrubs and change into the khakis and sleeveless blouse she'd worn to work. Until she bent over to pull her pants on, she'd never realized exactly how many muscles were involved with the mere process of dressing. Feeling a little dizzy by the time she'd finished, she sat down on a folding chair and used the privacy to call Nick from her new cell phone.
"Hello?"
His voice sounded weary, as if expecting more bad news. "How's Megan? Any word from the doctors?"
"Megan is currently the reigning queen of the Dark Realm and is now proceeding to kick everyone's butt at John Madden's NFL.
The background noise grew muffled. She heard a door shut. When he returned on the line, there was a hollow echo, and she knew he'd retreated into the bathroom.
"The doctor just left."
"Why didn't you call me?"
Oh, God. What couldn't he say in front of Megan?
"Because there was nothing new. He said the tests are all normal so far, but they still need to consider doing the biopsy if they can't find out what's causing her fever and everything. Said he'll know more by tomorrow after he has a specialist review her labs."
"What the hell good are they if they can't tell us anything?"
She pushed onto her feet, the chair clattering to the floor.
"Calm down. Megan's fine. She had a little bit of a fever, but it didn't even bother her. She's more worried about you."
Lucy sagged against wire shelves crammed with office supplies.
"That's not fair. Isn't it you who was always talking about life not being fair?"
Typical, using her own words against her.
"Are you going to make it back tonight?"
His voice had an edge, one that she was slowly becoming familiar with, and not liking, not at all.
"I'm not sure when, but I'll keep my promise. Somehow."
"I can't believe you went back to work."
"You know why. Ashley is still out there. Somewhere."
He grunted. Another new habit. 14 years together. Did she know him at all?
You know the odds as well as I do. She's dead.
Don't say that!
Silence. I'm sorry. I shouldn't... Their words collided, and they both were silent once again. Damn, this was hard. She wished she could see his face, watch how he was moving. Was he rubbing the back of his ear like he did when he was anxious? Or was he truly angry and was holding his arms stretched out as if pushing her away? Things are happening way too fast, yet way too slow around here right now. She tried. Finally, he answered. Her husband, her friend, her confidant was back.
Sounds like the same as here.
Yeah, well, next time you vote for a move to a desert island where you don't have to worry about the outside world, I am definitely agreeing. This time she knew exactly the expression on his face. That boyish, wistful, faraway look. The same one that had made her first fall in love with him. A sigh escaped her, and the spell was broken.
Did you tell Mom about... earlier?
She saw it on the news. I told her it wasn't that bad, just a few stitches.
How was her date?
Now he had a trace of amusement in his voice.
She said thank you very much for not sicking the cops on her, and she had a wonderful time.
Did you get the guy's name? Are they going out again? Where's he live? What's he do?
Your mother is an intelligent, grown woman. Don't you have enough on your hands without worrying about her as well?
She turned her back to the door, burying the phone in her hands. I think I might have fucked up. Backed this guy into a corner.
What happened?
She quickly gave him the highlights about Fletcher.
Sounds like a classic malignant narcissist.
Gee, thanks, Doc. That helps a lot.
I know what narcissist is, but malignant makes me think of...
They both knew what malignant brought to mind.
Cancer.
Bone marrow biopsies. Little girls with no hair. Wasting away and dying before their time.
The point is... Nick threw her a lifeline, pulling her back to Fletcher. He needs Ashley.
So he wouldn't kill her?
She was relieved to have her gut feeling validated.
Why?
Malignant narcissists have no self-image, no sense of self without someone else providing it. I bet your guy lost that someone when he started this.
He mentioned his mother being sick.
Yeah, a dominant opposite-sex parent would definitely fit the bill. He may have first reached out to older women to fill her role, but found they weren't malleable enough.
So he worked his way down to a 14-year-old he could brainwash into doing anything. Is that why she's so valuable? Because of his time, effort? How far can I push him before that's negated?
You don't understand. The time and effort make her valuable, yes, but more than that, he needs her. She's his mirror. He is the reflection in the mirror. He doesn't exist without her.
Okay, now you're drifting into mumbo-jumbo land.
There was a polite tapping at the closet door, and she opened it.
Burroughs and Taylor are back,
John Greeley told her.
I've got to go.
She clung to the phone, reluctant to hang up, fearful that if she did, something bad might happen while she was absent from Megan's bedside. But the bitch of it was, something bad could happen with her right there beside Megan, and she'd be powerless to stop it. At least there was one girl she could save. Maybe.
Kiss Megan for me. Tell her I'll be there just as soon as I can.
Don't forget your promise.
I won't. I love you.
Hey, you be careful.
His voice dropped, low and imperative.
Please.
Always.
She hung up and reluctantly returned to the outside world. A smattering of applause coming from the bullpen pulled Lucy and Greeley from her office. Taylor stood just inside the door, a sheepish grin on his face, his arm in a cast and sling. Lucy and Greeley added their own applause to the standing ovation. She escorted Taylor to his desk, enjoying the blush that colored his features.
Hoo-ah!
Burroughs shouted in a fair impression of a Marine as the clapping died down.
Okay, everyone, back to work, Lucy said as Taylor sat down.
Glad you're back, Taylor. You feeling up to helping out around here? Definitely, he said, still beaming. Yeah, you look ready to go, Greeley put in. No field assignments until the cast's off, but I'll clear you for desk duty. Thank you, sir. Taylor seemed mesmerized by all the attention. I wasn't expecting this. It's kind of embarrassing. I mean, all I did was get thrown out of a window. Greeley laughed and clapped a hand on Taylor's good shoulder. A rite of passage. Ask Lucy about her first line of duty injury. Walden and Burroughs looked up at that. Come on, Guardino. Spill, said Burroughs. She shot Greeley a half-hearted glare. It was my first assignment after Quantico. We were backup vehicle on a car stop of a suspected mob enforcer. When we pulled up to the curb to make the stop, I caught my foot in a sewer grate, tripped over the stock of the Remington I was carrying, and landed flat on my face. Sprained my ankle and broke my nose.
Did you nail the guy?
The lead car had him before I even hit the ground, which I found out as soon as my partner, Special Agent Greeley over there, stopped laughing. Lucy smiled with the memory. It was in the ER before they took x-rays that she discovered she was pregnant with Megan.
Hey! Greeley held his hands up. I was just glad to be alive. If you'd discharged that shotgun, I'd be a dead man today.
Taylor grinned, bobbing his head, obviously fascinated by the war stories. How about you, Walden?
Sorry, kid. Other than a paper cut filling out an FD-28, I'd never been injured in the line. Don't look at me, Burroughs put in. I can't even remember the last time I had to draw my gun until I started hanging out with you guys. Think I'm going to call my union rep and ask for hazard pay.
He didn't hurt you any, did he? I mean, touch you? The man's voice slowly penetrated the haze clouding her mind. They were riding in his SUV. She felt as if she'd just woken from a long winter's nap, exhausted yet energized, hazy yet focused. Why was she here? What had the man said? He'd take her someplace safe? She rubbed her torn and swollen ankle. Safe and sound, where she could lick her wounds and prepare. For what? She wasn't quite sure. That was too far in the future to think about now. I'm sorry I didn't get there sooner. I was trying. As soon as I heard the Amber Alert, I knew. She said nothing, half unsure that he was even talking about her. She tried hard enough, she was certain she could forget everything. Just wake up to a new life, new person, new world. Her head bounced against the passenger side window, eyes closed to slits, allowing only a small slice of the landscape to whirl past like an old-time silent movie. I guess you're not ready to talk. That's okay, I understand. Let me tell you my story. There are some things you need to know. He laid a hand on her thigh, and she didn't flinch. There was nothing scary about his touch, nothing soothing either. It was as if her entire body was numb, unable to tell pain from comfort. His name is Bobby. Bobby Fagley, the man said. He paused to clear his throat. Her pulse quickened. She'd known someone named Bobby once upon a time, hadn't she? Had it all been a dream? A lover? A comrade? Until he had betrayed her. Or had she betrayed him? He pretends to be a kid, plays online games, makes friends with girls. There was a weird noise, like the man was choking back tears or laughter. One of the bodies in there was my girl. I've been looking for her. For him. For over a year. And when I heard the news about you, saw your picture, I knew he had taken you. You look just like my Vera. A long pause as she decided he wasn't talking about her, but someone else. Some other girl. Whatever he was talking about, it had nothing to do with her. She wasn't there. Had never even been there. I wish I could take you back to your folks, but there's a problem. Bobby Fagley is an FBI agent. No one would believe us. We can't go to the cops. His words bounced off her awareness, registering only the faintest of impact. She frowned. Surely there was something wrong with what he was telling her. Anxiety churned through her, but she hugged herself tight, rocking in the seat, the landscape blurring through her slitted vision. The pain faded, and she returned to her limbo of numbness. "It's just you and me, Ashley," he continued, oblivious to the fact that she was barely there, hanging on only because she needed her body to pump blood to her brain. If it wasn't for that, she'd be long gone, vanished. "Unless, do you want to go back to your parents? To your old life?" His words hammered at her, breaking the wall of ice she'd surrounded herself with. She jerked upright, eyes fully open but unable to focus. Darkness around the edges, only the road stretching out in front of them clear. "No." The single syllable was all she could manage as panic seized her vocal cords, clamping them shut. She was shivering, but she didn't feel cold, didn't feel anything, didn't want to feel anything.
"Well, all right then. It's just you and me. I promise I won't let anything happen to you, Ashley. I mean, Vixen."
The truck slowed as he turned to look at her.
"My name's Jim. Jim Fletcher."
She didn't meet his gaze. Instead, she closed her eyes once more, rocking herself back into welcome oblivion.